Hey, good evening, everybody. 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program. Thank you for tuning in. Well, the outrage over the police violence against innocent, unprotected, and obeying the law protesters in on Wall Street in Lower Manhattan is galvanizing resistance to not just that violence, but galvanizing support for the people who are on Lower Wall Street or Lower Manhattan. We'll get to that a little bit later in the program. This hour is sponsored by Chris Siragusa. Here's his message. This is my birthday present to myself. Thank you for always working to make this world better for my kids and yours. Chris, that's very kind. Thank you, and thank you for the sponsorship. And if you are considering sponsoring an hour of the program, now's the time. Just go to my website, MikeMolloy.com, and you'll find out how to do it. Thanks, Chris. Speaking of making this world better for my kid and yours, or my kids and yours, I got this email from a listener in Tampa today. I did some checking, and everything in this email is absolutely factual and correct. What this listener sent me, what this woman sent me, is an email, excuse me, a copy of an email that she received from someone in the Hillsborough County school system. The woman who wrote to me has a child in that school system. I think he's a sixth grader. And let me just give you a quick synopsis. The woman, I'll call her W, as opposed to Z. W wrote, what happened, W's kid was in school the other day, and all of a sudden, a public school, all of a sudden, the door opens and in walks three uniform Tampa police officers, and proceeded to inform fifth graders that they were about to be searched for weapons. Now, these are kids. These are 11-year-olds. I guess sixth graders. These are kids. And each child was forced to come to the front of the class in front of his or her classmates. He was wanded, you know, with a metal wand, a metal detecting wand, had to empty his or her pockets and had to stand there with this humiliation. This is in a public school. This freaked me out. So anyway, that in a nutshell is what happened. So the woman I'm telling you about, W, decided to react instead of doing what so many Americans would do. When her kid told her this, what so many Americans would do would just go, oh, well, you know, there's danger everywhere. There's stuff everywhere. This is what W wrote to the person that responded to her complaint. Thank you for getting back to me. Here are my concerns. I was stunned that I was not asked for consent or even notified that my 11-year-old child was going to be searched by a police officer. I was not aware that this kind of search was going to take place, and I would have appreciated the opportunity to talk to my son and give him some context and information before the fact. I realize the student handbook lists, quote, random searches, end quote, as a Hillsborough County School Board policy, but in no way does it indicate that the actual event would transpire the way it did, with a team of police officers entering the classroom unannounced to scan each child in full view of his classmates with a metal detector. At the least, a letter detailing the procedure would have been appropriate. Are the officers who conduct the searches employees of the Tampa Police Department? Are they trained to deal with children? Parents should have been given the opportunity to provide our children with context, reassurance, and guidance. What message does this teach them about school as a safe environment, or about knowing and exercising their rights as citizens not subject to search without probable cause, about the concept of innocent until proven guilty, about being treated essentially as criminal suspects in the sixth grade? What about consequences for children who suffer from anxiety? The implications are potentially traumatic. Jake said his, quote, heart was racing, end quote, because he didn't know what was going on at first. He also said one of the officers told the class he'd once found a butcher knife in a classroom. Not exactly reassuring information for a non-anxious 11-year-old child to hear, much less one who isn't well-equipped emotionally to deal with that kind of information. I understand that security issues are paramount and that you are in a tremendously difficult position. We turn our kids over to you each day and expect, demand, that you keep them safe. And on the other hand, you're faced with the reality of school violence and children bringing weapons to school. My point is simply that I would have appreciated the opportunity to speak to Jake about this before the fact, and for the district to have had someone available to answer questions about the procedure. I also understand that this is a school board policy and not unique to, and she mentions the school. I've left a message with the district office, and I intend to speak to my school board representative. But I also wanted to make you aware of my concerns. Thank you, W. Now, when I heard about this earlier today, I found out that this happens in three randomly chosen classrooms a day in the Hillsborough County school system. That's Tampa and Tampa suburbs. Three times a day. And I did not find out how low in terms of grade or age this randomized search goes. Do they go down to third graders? Second? First? How about kindergarten? This is madness. This is just. it's living in the United States of America these days. Fifth graders, stand up, come up here, turn around, empty your pockets. You know, we found a butcher knife the other day. What do you got in your back pocket? What's down there? Well, you got something in your shoe? Stand still while I run this wand up and down your body. Fifth grade. Jesus Christ. Well, that ought to get the program off to a nice bouncy start. How about in your school district? That is, that's not true here in, I don't want to name ours, Kathy, but that's not true in our school district, is it?
I hope not. I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything either. But the woman who sent this to me, she has had her kid in that school district since he was, I don't know, in kindergarten. And never heard about this. And in fact, this is the first time it finally happened to him. But we're talking about a countywide system. Three times a day in three different schools. Fifth graders. Fourth graders? Third graders? Seventh. Sixth graders. Step up here. Get your hands out of your pockets, son. And when you take your hands out of your pockets, bring out whatever you have in your pockets. All right, lay it right here. Now turn around. Keep turning. Stand still, boy. This isn't going to hurt you. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Chicago.
They'll think that white hood's all they need. Cause it's a hard life, it's a hard life, it's a very hard life. It's a hard life wherever you go. And if we poison our children with hate,
redefining anger management. Back to Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. That was just, kind of a shocker. Elementary school kids, John writes, Mike, I'm 63 almost, and I can tell you that the stuff that happened to me in my young years, I still remember, and not all the stuff that happened was good. So what you have mentioned will stay with these young boys and girls forever and will shape their lives. They won't forget. Shame on parents for allowing this. They should be picketing and doing far, far more to stop these invasions of the lives of our children. Our children, for God's sake. That's from John. If you have a comment about this, send me an email, will you? Prairie 2 writes, or is it Prairie 2? Yeah. I take it these searches weren't part of the civics lesson where the kids learned about the Constitution or Supreme Court rulings on the Fourth Amendment. And then he quotes from Terry versus Ohio from 1968, which I won't get completely into, but yes, sir. So if you do have a comment about elementary school kids being searched with metal detectors in their classrooms by Tampa police officers with no advance notice of the procedure or what to expect to the parents, send me an email. Send it to MikeDMalloy@AOL.com. This came in late this afternoon. Over 100 New York Police Department officers are refusing to work in support of Occupy Wall Street movement. In a bizarre twist of fate, a growing movement of New York City Police Department officers are banding together with the Occupy Wall Street movement, while the mainstream media continues to relatively ignore this escalating event. All except Lawrence O'Donnell, and more, but Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC has really been giving this some coverage, especially the violence perpetrated by Deputy Inspector Anthony Bologna. He's the one who walked through the randomly through the crowd, picking people who were doing nothing to blast with pepper spray and then walking away. This son of a bitch is in trouble now at this point. He really is. Occupy Wall Street movement issued the following statement on their website. Quote, today we received unconfirmed reports that over 100 blue-collar police refused to come into work in solidarity with our movement. These numbers will grow. We are the 99%. You will not silence us. The news was released shortly after the identity of Deputy Inspector Anthony Bologna was revealed after he pepper sprayed, this says allegedly pepper sprayed, a deaf woman. Well, this must be somebody else then. Also, excuse me, It is starting to take hold. I just hope this continues. I hope that this really does become America's Tahrir Square. New York City labor unions are preparing to back, where's this from? Is this from Huffington? I think it is. Are preparing to back the unwieldy grassroots band occupying a park in Lower Manhattan, in a move that could mark a significant shift in the tenor of the anti-corporate Occupy Wall Street protests and send thousands more people into the streets. The Transit Workers Union Local 100's Executive Committee, which oversees the organization of subway and bus workers, voted unanimously last night to support the protesters. The union claims 38,000 members. A union backed organizing coalition, which orchestrated a large May 12th march on Wall Street before the protests, is planning a rally on October 5th in explicit support. And SEIU, which represents doorman security guards and maintenance workers, is using its October 12th rally to express solidarity with the Zuccotti Park protesters. SEIU 32BJ union spokesman Kwame Patterson said, quote, the call went out over a month ago before actually the occupancy of the Wall Street took place. Now he added, we're all coming under one cause, even though we have our different initiatives, end quote. The protests found their genesis not in any of the established New York social action groups, but with a call put out by a Canadian magazine. While other major unions beyond the Transit Workers Union have yet to officially endorse Occupy Wall Street, more backing could come as early as this week. Both the New York Metro Area Postal Union and SEIU 1199 are considering such moves. There's more here. I'm going to share some more of this with you when we come back. Maybe, finally, something is beginning to stir in this country. Maybe we've hit that tipping point. Maybe enough is a goddamn enough. I know where I'm going to be October 6th in Washington, D.C., and I hope you're going to be there, too, at Freedom Plaza. We'll be right back. Before the hour, this hour is sponsored by Chris Siragusa. His message, this is my birthday present to myself. Thank you for always working to make this world better for my kids and yours. Thanks for sponsoring the program, the hour, whatever. Thank you, Chris. Jackie DeSalvo, an Occupy Wall Street organizer, says a series of public actions aimed at expressing support for labor have convinced unions that the two groups' struggles are one, the Occupy Wall Street and the labor unions. If ever that were true, it is now. DeSalvo, a retired professor at Baruch College in her late 60s, who has emerged as a driving force in the effort to link up labor and the protests, said, quote, labor is up against the wall, and they're begging us to help them. And DeSalvo herself is a member of the Professional Staff Congress, which represents teachers at the City University of New York. If unions move to support the protests going on now on Wall Street in Lower Manhattan, that could mean thousands more people marching in protest. So far, the Occupy Wall Street people have not managed to get the 10,000 or so who attended the unrelated May 12th march on Wall Street. There were several unions who helped put together that demonstration. Now, hopefully, they will rally for this grassroots group, OccupyWallStreet.org. Asked if the union support could dilute the message of the Occupy Wall Street protesters, DeSalvo said the group's stance would remain unchanged. She said, Occupy Wall Street will not negotiate watering down its own message. I personally hope that union members will support this. This is nothing that they have to lead. Matter of fact, what they have to do here, there's no lead, there's no follow in this demonstration. Decisions are made by consensus. So I hope the union leaders or the union members will understand that they are involved whether they want to show up at the demonstrations or not. That point is moot. I mean, it would be great to see hundreds of thousands of people converge on Lower Manhattan in protest of what's going on. But for anybody in this country, organized or not organized, I'm talking about the 99 percenters, anybody who says, well, you know, I don't have a dog in that fight. I work over here for this place, or, you know, I'm doing this or doing that. I really support those people down there, but I don't, you know, it doesn't concern me. Yes, it does. And whether you show up or not, the people who are involved with OccupyWallStreet.org are there for you. So, the thing that I get worried about with Occupy Wall Street is, as different groups want to join this, and I hope they will, that there might be some ego problems with people that would want to come on board. And the advice would be, don't do that. You know, this is a nascent movement. This is brand new. It's something that nobody organized, not really. It's something that is as spontaneous as you can get. And the people who have been there for what's it been now, 10 days, 11, people being arrested, people being pepper sprayed, people being had their heads slammed against car bumpers, all kinds of violence by the police against peaceful demonstrators. That's how the violence has flowed from law enforcement to the people attempting to exercise what's left of the right to protest peacefully. But this is the lesson, just like the fifth graders and sixth graders in Tampa are supposed to learn. Well, the cops can come into your classroom any time and order you to the front of the room and run a metal detecting wand up and down your body and make you empty your pockets. Get used to it, children. This is your life. Just as those kids have no say about what's going on. The people who don't participate in the beginnings of what one hopes will be a nonviolent rebellion against this nonsense, you have to understand that you don't have a say either. So it's time to change it. Isn't it? Come on, we've been talking about this for how long? You know, what's the tipping point? What's it going to take? Blah, 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 blah. It's very clear now that Democrats nor Republicans as organized political parties are going to lead anybody out of this. The Democrats have decided to let war criminals wander this goddamn country on book tours. War criminals, mass killers. Are you kidding me? You think the Democrats have anything to do with this? No. And Republicans, they're doing their master's bidding, turning this country into a fascist state. They're doing what the Koch brothers have instructed them to do. No more, no less, until the new orders come down. And I'll be talking about that later tonight, too. Oh, trust me on that one. So, whether or not you support with your physical presence or doing something to support the people who are right now in Lower Manhattan, whether you support them materially or not, you are involved in that demonstration. For God's sake, just like the woman in Tampa who told me about the situation with her kid. I talked to her again later this evening just to make sure everything was as it appeared in her email, and found out that someone had called her. And the conversation, I think I mentioned that, the conversation she had, and she has to work her way up through a higher level. But she said, oddly, she was the only one. There may have been one other parent that she's aware of who lodged a protest. That's it. You know, when I heard about this, I tried to think how I would react with my second grader. If I picked her up at school and she said, "Oh, guess what, Daddy? The cops came into our class today, and we had to empty our pockets. They were searching for butcher knives." Oh. We have a report from Prairie 2 we'll get to tonight. Did you hear the latest about Bank of America Corporation? Bank of America? Is that how much did, what were their profits last year? It was in the billions upon billions upon billions, wasn't it? They plan to charge a $5 monthly fee for all of their customers who use a debit card. Did you hear me? A $5 a month fee, whether you swipe the card or not. $60. This is in the WallStreetJournal.com. So, Bank of America is joining a number of other banks, it says here, that are pressing their customers to help recover lost revenue from new regulations. You know, it's like a goddamn water balloon. You ever had one of those? You squeeze it over here and it puffs up over here. Then you squeeze it over there and it puffs up over there. Capitalist America, corporate America will find a way to steal every goddamn thing they can get their hands on one way or another. They're ordered by legislation to lower their interest rates or stop charging exorbitant fees. So what do? Oh, well, we'll go to the debit cards. $5 a month. Bank of America is the largest U.S. bank by assets. So they announced today they will begin charging $5 each billing cycle that they use their debit card to make a purchase. The fee is set to kick in early next year. We'll be right back.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Chris Siragusa. And his message, this is my birthday present to myself. Thank you for always working to make this world better for my kids and yours. Well, kind words. Thank you, Chris, for the sponsorship. For real. So Bank of America, $5 a month to use their debit card. Remember, that's your money. I mean, it's not. Oh, never mind. And the J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, Regions Financial, they're all getting into. They're going to do this, gouging their debit card users. And a spokeswoman for Bank of America said in a statement today, quote, "The economics of offering a debit card have changed with recent regulations. This new fee allows us to continue to offer the convenience of a debit card with the full range of added features customers have come to expect." Well, you know, the best way to solve it, that is to get the hell away from banks. I mean, when I was a kid, I used to hear the adults talking about how the banks were useless. And I used to think, no, what do they mean? I had a little Christmas Club savings account, 50 cents a week. Went into that, and at the end of the year, I had like $25, which was a lot of money back in the 19th century when I was a kid. But I didn't understand the banks are predators, banks are awful. And you know, the older people that I came in contact with, my family members, my grandparents, people like that, they had this attitude about banks being bad. I don't know what the hell they were talking about. And it wasn't until I was a fully formed adult that I realized what they were talking about, and now I get it. And I would not do business with a bank. I will use a tin container under the bed before I would ever approach a bank. Except for the damn business account, right, Kathy? From TVNewsLies.org, the New York Transit Workers Union, TWU, voted to support the Wall Street protesters at their meeting last night. A member of TWU Local 100 said they would join the protest Friday at 4 p.m. The TWU has four main divisions: railroad, gaming, airline, transit, and utility. That looks like five. One, two, three. Oh, airline. Okay, five. University and service. The union has 114 autonomous locals representing over 200,000 members and retirees in 22 states. Who else? Yesterday, we reported, TV News Live said, that the Teamsters Union declared their support for protesters. We also found out the United Pilots Union had members at the protest demonstrating in uniform. Today, TV News Live says, we learned the Industrial Workers of the World put a message of support on their website as well. Verizon union workers have joined the protesters in New York City. So let me rephrase it. I'm hoping that this is what it appears to be. Teamsters, New York Transit Workers, Industrial Workers of the World, Verizon Union Workers. So let's hope. Or maybe you don't hope. Maybe, you know, maybe not. I don't know. But, you know, this is how a movement, a protest movement, can start that is that turns out to be a very effective movement and sometimes a game changer. I hate that term, game changer, Jesus. But, okay, let's use it. A game changer, a protest movement that starts small, starts organically, all of a sudden. The police go nuts, whether the police are in Egypt or Israel or here or wherever it occurs, Tunisia. The white-dominated South back in the 60s. Colombia. The country. The protest starts out. And it starts out usually relatively quiet. People show up, we're not going to move. We're here because of X, Y, and Z. And then the police go nuts because all of a sudden they have a nonviolent resistance in front of them. Cops are not trained to handle nonviolence. Oh, I know, they get crowd control, but the methods used in crowd control, while perhaps not strictly within the definition of violence, become violent when you start walking over people, and anyone who resists you as you thud, clump, thud, clump, thud, clump, thud, clump, thud, clump, and approach them with your plexiglass shields and your face masks and your clubs and your pepper spray, thud, clump, thud, clump, thud, clump. You know, if that's not violence, what the hell is? So eventually, some members of the police force lose it. And in this instance, somebody, if I'm wrong here, send me a video that shows these protesters committing any act of violence. This is civil disobedience. This is nonviolence. And then the cops go nuts, and the clubs come out, and the kicks, and the pushes, and the plastic cuffs, and banging their heads against cars, and pepper spraying them, pushing them around, insulting them, grabbing people, pulling people away from the curb. People who are not trying to get in the way of the duties being performed by the NYCPD. Let's hope this continues to build. We'll be right back.
Guys, notice.
Susan in Squim, who writes regarding the Ustream chat room here. Mike, the chat room is talking, and apparently California uses debit cards with Bank of America to distribute its unemployment payments. And Nevada does a similar thing with food stamps and Citibank. I bet all public entities are starting to hand out welfare on debit cards. This looks like a sweetheart deal. It needs some looking into. Yeah, isn't that a kick in the ass, huh? For people who receive temporary assistance. What is the new, not the new, but the one passed during the Clinton years, you know, welfare reform? Food stamp allotments or whatever, it comes out, the credit comes out on Bank of America cards or any bank that is now decided to charge these six. Oh, that's great. And you don't think the game is stacked against the middle class and the poor in this country? You better wake up. Well, no, you don't need to wake up. Stay asleep. When the revolution's over, then maybe somebody will wake you up and say, hey, it's a new world. From Prairie 2, laying under the lemon truck. This one's not as long. The weekly report of initial unemployment claims dropped by an unexpectedly large number of 37,000, all the way down to 391,000 claims. This is the lowest it's been since April, when high gas prices stalled the economy. It seems things haven't been as bad as we thought, with the government having revised second quarter GDP upward, showing a 1.3 growth instead of only 1%. The Bureau of Labor Statistics also revised March job growth up by 192,000 additional jobs. That number would be a good month by itself. See, I never know if Prairie 2 is being ironic or, you know, right on or sarcastic or, oh, well, let me go on. The new normal standard for labor statistics says that anything under 400,000 claims per week indicates significant job growth. That's the good news. The bad news is that retailers are expecting a mediocre Christmas season and aren't planning to hire a small fraction of the usual seasonal workers. I guess that means are planning to hire a small fraction of the usual seasonal workers. Part of the reason for this is that they already have the help. Retailers have so many people working part-time that they can simply increase hours to cover the seasonal demand. This isn't bad news if you have a job, and you might not need that second seasonal job if your hours are increased. So really, this may not be bad news at all, but could signal a sort of recovery in itself depending on how good retail sales turn out to be. I'm still not sure. Things might look gloomy for JCPenney and Walmart, but the parallel economy of high-end retailers is expecting another great year. Well, yeah, the stores where the top 10% spend their 40% of the retail dollar are doing just fine, thank you. The bottom 90% continue to drift toward a lower standard of living with an increasingly smaller share of the pie, even as the pie shrinks. Only the pie did grow by 1.3%, but we all know where it went. The rest of us can eat cake. Much has been made of the recent weakening of China's manufacturing sector, but China has been moving for some time to reduce its dependence on exports, and this is probably the only significance of the downturn. To illustrate the point, China passed a new milestone in the third quarter on its way to world domination. For the first time, there were more new corporate bonds issued that were denominated in Chinese renminbi rather than in euros. The U.S. dollar still dominates the world with fully half of corporate bonds issued in greenbacks, but the issuance of dim sum or corporate bonds valued in renminbi for investment outside of China are also growing unabated. Uh-oh. The right likes to talk about all the opportunities that are in a downturn, in a downturn, as in, well, when you're given lemons, make lemonade. So if you've been hit by the lemon truck, or more specifically, you've been given the permanent vacation by the heartless corporation you worked for, you can look forward to getting a Hallmark card to commemorate the occasion. That's right. Hallmark has a whole new section devoted to the cards, and with 400,000 Americans put out of work every week, they have identified a truly big demographic. At least Hallmark is creating jobs if the cards aren't made in China. I think I'd prefer to get an envelope with a few renminbi in it. PrairieNumeral2.com. See, I don't know. And now he'll send me an email. I don't know if he's being ironic or when he talks about all these recovery jobs of working part-time as a retail shop clerk. Okay. I think about the people who have graduated high school or graduated college, and no snarky remarks about the graduates, okay? And find wonderful world of jobs pretty much closed down, except, well, over here, JCPenney. I found out by watching the local news tonight that comes out of Atlanta. By local, I mean pretty much all of North Georgia. Atlanta is this 5-6 million population behemoth. That Atlanta now ranks number one, Metro Atlanta now ranks number one in the number of lost jobs for a metropolitan area. Number one in the country. Atlanta. And I think the number I saw, I didn't pay real close attention to it because the news program that announced that almost said it with pride. We're number one! But I think the number was in over 200,000 jobs in metro Atlanta area have disappeared. They're gone. All right, we will take some phone calls. The number here is 877-996-2556. Arnold is in Durham, North Carolina. Hey, Arnold.
Hey, Mike Malloy, man. How you doing, brother?
I'm all right. How are you doing? You always make me smile.
Brainwash.
You know, you make
brainwash,
me... Hey, listen up. Him. Listen up. You always make me smile when you call in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had to call tonight, man. The Hurricane think I'm brainwashed. He think I'm lost up there in some kind of Disney world that, you know, that my only... purpose is to come up and vote Democrat, you know, and wonder why. I mean, even though the Democrats, you know, they disregard the black vote as theirs and they don't ever have to work, really actually work for it, but the Republicans, they put up major efforts to deny that black vote, to take away my amendment right to vote. For Hurricane, they're going to flush down the toilet like they did in 2000. 80,000 votes in just Jacksonville, Florida alone.
Mm-hmm.
They flushed them down the toilet. That could be 80,000 votes for Hurricane, but I don't think so.
I don't think so either. You know, the Republicans are on a nationwide kick to eliminate as many voters as they possibly can. And most of those voters are in areas that traditionally go Democratic. Whether they're black or white is immaterial. But the Republicans are doing everything they can to make sure that Democratic voters are reduced to zip. Hold on a second, Arnold. I got to do some commercials here, and I'll come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. If you're on hold, stay right there. I'm going to come to your calls here in a moment. I got this from Eddie in Portland, Oregon. Regarding the caller last night, remember the guy that I just couldn't take anymore, the one that would call in from San Francisco or San Diego, to tell me that there are certain things as a citizen I should not know, nobody should know, and our government should, in certain instances, operate in secrecy. And, of course, to me, that is hog snot. That is, that's the quickest argument for dissolving the government right there. I mean, when did that become, one of the, primary directives of government is certain things have to be done in secrecy. Anyway, Eddie in Portland wrote in, Mike, this one goes to last night's caller. Yeah, the one that says that we should not know or not question when our government acts on our behalf to do its dirty deeds. We, the American people, should not know or not question when our government, and then he writes, in the past, in 1893, together with local Hawaiian businessmen and politicians composed primarily of Americans and European residents, the queen was overthrown, her cabinet and her marshal, and took over the government of the Kingdom of Hawaii, a sovereign nation with an international recognized constitutional monarchy. In 1898, invaded and occupied the island of Puerto Rico. The island currently remains as a colony of the U.S., and its residents are considered second-class U.S. citizens as dictated by congressional power. There is no word in the U.S. Constitution that defines its citizens in different tiers as it pertains to the exercise of rights, or for all purposes, anything else. In 1954, directed the Guatemalan coup d'etat as a covert operation organized by the CIA to overthrow Jacobo Arbenz Guzman, the democratically elected president of Guatemala. September 1973, directed the coup, overthrew the democratically elected Chilean government and murdered its president, Salvador Allende. 1980s, initiated the Iran-Contra affair. a clandestine action not approved at the, by the United States Congress, began in 1985, blah, blah, blah. The list goes on and on. The president. We, the American people, should not know and not question when our government, first, causes that our presidential election is decided through a shady recount of votes like the one on the state of Florida in the year 2000 to put G.W. Bush in power. Actually, it was the stopping of the counting. Contracts with political campaign contributors and using voting machines like the ones manufactured by Diebold, used in Ohio during the 2004 U.S. presidential elections that allowed Bush and Cheney to remain in power for four more years. And that goes on and on. And then he says the future. We, the American people, should not know and not question when our government decides that the Chinese totalitarian model is the one that best accommodates the needs of its corporate elite and then moves on to create a fascist state with a new face and a new name, the American corporatocracy. And the list goes on. Yes, it does, Eddie, it does. And the you know, you have to understand that the person from San Diego who called in is a product of, I mean, somehow he learned all that. I don't think he learned it in primary school or secondary school. I don't know if he had any education beyond that. One also learns from one's parents, from whatever civic or religious organizations your parents put you into, because when you're 7, 8, or 9, you don't go join clubs and churches. your parents force you to do that. If he had a military career, obviously his brain was emptied and replaced with whatever the military wanted him to believe at the given moment when he was being trained to go to work for corporate America in various foreign countries. In his business dealings, you know, I don't know. I have no idea where someone learns that. I mean, it is so counterintuitive as to what makes a democratic republic or a self-governing entity when people, you know, I tried to point that out. Government of, by, and for the people is what the Constitution says. But that guy and so many people, he's not unique. And the only reason I'm talking about him tonight and last night is because he's the one that called in. But there are tens of millions of people in the United States of America, by God, who believe exactly what he believes. Don't question. It's not our place to question. Get in line. These trains are going to take you to work camps. And when you get to the work camps, you're going to take a nice shower. And then everything, we have to de-louse you. Don't question. Don't respond. Don't rebel. Just get in line. Arnold, I'm sorry. I got carried away. I got to put you on hold again.
That's okay. I love you. Hear your rant, man. Go ahead.
All right, Arnold. Back on hold. I'm going to get you right after the break. Just stay there. I'm sorry, Arnold. We'll come right back.
here.
25 before the hour. Arnold is in Durham, North Carolina. Okay, I remember this time. Arnold?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we're back.
Yeah, man, listen, you know, I was sitting there thinking what about what Herman Cain had done said about blacks being brainwashed. You know what? Blacks, on a whole, and as a voting bloc, as citizens of this country, they share some of the worst disparaging rates you want to think of. You know, if it's cancer, whether it's the AIDS virus, whether it's employment or the riches or the wealth, they have always the negative and the disparaging rates of those things. But one thing black people eat white America's lunch on, they do not vote against their best interests. They do not do it.
Mm-hmm.
They do not do it. You can't go into a polling place and pull them even for some crazy mixed up Republican, huh?
Really?
It's not blindness.
And that's why Republicans hate black voters.
That's right. That's right. That's right. They eat the white American lunch. They don't go there and be brainwashed and listen to what those Republicans say about what they're going to do for them, knowing all the time that the Republicans are going to drain them of everything they got.
Mm-hmm.
And leave them. They want to take away their Social Security, take away their Medicare.
You know, after 8 years of the Bush crime family, I read the other day that net worth of families, and they divided into white, Latino, and black. Whites fell by X percent, but still in the positive column. Latino fell by X percent, much more, still in the positive column. But the net worth of the average black family is now negative.
Exactly.
And that's the result. I don't know what the hell Herman Cain or any Republican is talking about all the time, or every once in a while you hear Republicans, usually white Republicans, politicians talking about how they're going to demonstrate to the African American voter that the Republican Party has a lot to offer, and that they shouldn't just, you know, always vote Democratic, because the Democratic Party takes their vote for granted. Well, the Democratic Party takes everyone who votes for their members for granted. They take me for granted. That's why, you know, screw them.
But,
you know, for Herman Cain to be making these statements when the average net worth of the average net worth of a black family in America is now in negative territory. I don't know what people, black or white, listening to this fool thinks when they hear that. If they know the truth, the statistics. I don't get it. I just don't get it.
That's the exact thing, man. They got to know the truth of the matter. And these people, all they do is lie every time they get in front of a microphone.
That's true.
Herman Cain, when he won the straw vote down there in Florida, I was like blew away. But I said, well, look like they got that sort of a black man, you know? Mike, because I saw Mike Steele on Chris Matthews tonight,
right,
trying to explain this thing, right?
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to take away his 2010 Picnic Show Award and give it to Herman Cain. Not only Herman Cain, but that guy down in Florida named Mr. West. You know, I know your viewers might know.
Alan West, this guy is crazy. Herman Cain, I don't think Herman Cain is crazy. I think Herman Cain may, you know, he just may be playing the white folks, and that's okay. But Alan West is a certified nut. I've never seen anybody like him unless it's Rick Perry. You know, white people don't have an exclusive franchise on nuts. There are a lot of black folks who are just crazier than loons, and Herman Cain happens to, Alan West, that man scares me. He scares me all the way down to the bottom of my feet. I mean, he just, woo.
That statement he made some time ago about Harriet Tubman and blacks being on plantations to the Democrats, he going to come by and free us all. Oh, Lord, hold on, hold on, thank God, hold on, hallelujah, yes, sir, yes, sir. And he can't get up off his knees and nothing like that, man, come on.
I hear you.
This guy, you talking about somebody brainwashed, he's going down the hill. Well, I give him and Mr. Herman Cain the Picnic Show Award of this year, 2011.
You're bad, Arnold, you are so bad. I got to go. All thanks, right,
brother.
Arnold. All right.
Well, I'll let you later.
All right, take care. The Picnic Shoulder Award. Hoo-ah. Where are we? Okay, Julie. Julie is in Bishop, California, listening on Sirius. Hello, Julie.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Great.
Good.
I was calling in wanting to comment about the unemployment benefits deal with these banks, and
right.
Definitely the one out here in California with the Bank of America. My roommate is unemployed right now, unfortunately, and you know, he called up to ask if he could what exactly were the benefits
right.
of this account, and it's not even treated as a normal checking account. To say, for instance, that he's got a Bank of America account and he's got a kid in, you know, Massachusetts, and they want to do online transfer mm-hmm. between Bank of America accounts, and you know, so whatever California's deal is, they've got it restricted, you know, that Bank of America probably works that deal where they won't even give them, you know, common courtesy of some of the regular features of
well, I think the states that are using these banks to administer payment, social service payment, and then to find out like unemployment comp or food stamp account or whatever it is, that any bank who uses or allows their bank to be used, damn, I have a hard time getting the sentence out. They see this as a huge cash cow. All of a sudden, if the government is going to use these banks, and remember who the government, what government makes these decisions, and if these banks are going to be used, they're going to milk this dry. So when you have people who are desperately trying to keep their heads, above water, and all of a sudden, Bank of America or whomever is going to ding them $60 a year to use the damn debit card. This is insanity. I don't know how to see it as anything other than just predatory craziness. You know what I'm saying, Julie?
Exactly. I know that this is a pretty rural county that we live in here, and
uh-huh.
you know, there is a Bank of America in Bishop, but there are a lot of other communities in this county and a lot of other citizens that may be unemployed. And, you know, I'm sure this, across America, you might not have a Bank of America branch.
That's right.
You know, in your backyard, on your corner, even in your town. And to me, that's the usurpation of that citizen's rights. And you can add U.S. Bank to the list. I know in Arkansas, U.S. Bank has the unemployment
mm-hmm.
contract.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
It's amazing how that works. Julie, thanks. I appreciate your call. Thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in. Mark is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. I went to Occupy Wall Street in San Francisco today.
Oh, great. Great.
Yeah, we had a really nice turnout, and, you know, we had young and old there, and the older people had their pensions ripped off from Wall Street, and the young people just got robbed out of their future by the corporate criminals and George Bush.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, I mean, there's a lot of anger out there right now, and I think, Mike, I think this is the time. I think they've trampled on us long enough. and you've got young and old out there right now, you're going to get a majority of Americans on the same page, I believe.
I hope so. Mark, we've talked about this so much on this program over the past 3, 4, 5 years. What is it going to take? What is the tipping point? What is the trigger event? What is it going to take for Americans to wake up and realize what has 99% happened? The door is closing. The windows are being nailed shut. And we have a very little time left to react and then to become proactive and stop the machine. The machine is this predatory capitalism that now owns our political system, is trying to own, if it doesn't already, our educational system. It owns our healthcare delivery system. It's beginning to own the military. It's owning the prison industrial complex. What in the hell is left? So, I mean, we don't have a lot of time, and I just hope to God that people will realize that we don't have a lot of time. It's time to rise up and say, no, this is it. You've come too far. We're taking it back. We're taking it away from you.
Well, Mike, I think that time has finally come, and I think the people are ready now. I really do. I think it's there. When you look around and you see that our voting is being suppressed, and
all of it,
you see a young generation of Americans with no future, no jobs. When you see that, when you see kids out in the street...
When you see that, that's when you know if the revolution's not going to come now, then it's probably not going to come. Mark, I have to leave it there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate your comments.
They tied me to this table right here in the Tower of Song.
Exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting.
Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
And even the Jordan River has bodies floating, but you tell me.
Welcome back. 10 before the hour. Coming up next hour, the Teabaggers. Let me see a show of hands. How many of you folks know how the Teabaggers really began their little fake AstroTurf operation? Okay, so a few of you do. But stick around, because I have a feeling I'm going to get very, very pissed off next hour. We'll see. Mary is in early Iowa listening on Sirius. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
I want to apologize for the last time I called. I said it was the head of the Heritage Foundation were Richard Viguerie, which is true, but it's Paul Weyrich. I know who Richard Armitage is.
Yeah, well, they're all criminals, Mary, right? How are you? You doing okay?
I'm not on the corner anymore because I've had to have several epidurals.
Oh, really?
Well, I'm all right. I'm walking around and doing everything I always do.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I did want to tell you that The Guardian said that I must have heard this on Democracy Now! Because I haven't heard anything else. Mm-hmm. The Guardian said that everything they had been told for 10 years was a lie. And then Amy Goodman on Democracy Now!, I checked it twice because, you know, it's more than one time a day.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that the head of Al Jazeera, now there is a D.C. bureau,
right,
had to step down because WikiLeaks exposed that he was used by our government to keep the bad pictures and...
Mm.
The things some people might not like to see, the results of war.
Right.
And I did check it twice, and I believe it was last Friday. And I think that's very interesting, but I haven't heard a thing about it
Well, you know, I'll have to go to Amy Goodman's site because that's a new one to me, too. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, if it's absolutely true that now whether or not WikiLeaks deliberately exposed this or it was in the 200,000 document dump that they recently let out there. But, you know, Al Jazeera has all of a sudden a huge online audience here in the United States.
I know.
And I think the American Bureau is run by Americans, Anglo-Americans.
See, there's a D.C. Bureau.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised if that were true, but it doesn't you know all it says to me, well it says a couple of things, but it also says that the managing editor or whomever at WikiLeaks or at Al Jazeera in the United States who made that agreement is agreeing to cooperate with the enemy being any government. If it happens to be ours, it's ours. But any government who says, hey, listen, don't let the people know the damage we're doing in their name. Don't let them see the pictures of the people blown up and the houses demolished and destroyed. Don't let them see it. And any news gathering or news disseminating organization that agrees to that, they deserve to be exposed, in my opinion. I hope nobody gets hurt, but they deserve to be exposed.
Oh, God, yes. And, you know, I've long thought that if we were allowed to see the results of what we have done, the results of war, that people might not love it so much.
Yeah, I hear that.
I just want this to end, and I am really counting on Wall Street. I just... we've got to do something.
Right.
Somebody's got to do something.
Well, have you been to OccupyWallStreet.org?
No.
You haven't been to the website?
No. I just, Rosie has my computer because I was never going to learn on it, and she had to stop every time.
Is that your daughter, granddaughter?
No, it's a friend. She's a friend of mine.
Oh,
but
okay.
She works, and I could have learned to use it, but I really didn't want to.
Yeah.
All I wanted it for was for your program. And that's the truth.
Well,
that's the
so
God's
kind.
Truth.
Yeah.
And anyway, I was never going to master it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I do, well, I live for your program.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm not going to go to the Wall Street protest, at least not now. If that goes on indefinitely, who knows? But I will be in Washington for the events scheduled to start October 6th.
Mm-hmm.
And I will try. Brad Friedman will be filling in for me Wednesday, Thursday.
I like him.
Yeah, he'll be filling in. And we're trying to set something up. It depends on where I am and what I'm doing. Or I can call Brad live on the air and just give kind of a report of what happened Wednesday and Thursday, you know, if I'm not in jail, which I'm going to try to avoid. No, I'm going to try to avoid it this time because I don't know that I can do another arrest right now. But you never know. Mary, I got a boogie. Thanks a lot and stay in touch, okay?
I will. And you keep doing what you're doing.
I'll keep trying. Thanks, Mary.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care. You got to love her. All right, we're just about out of time for the hour, so we shan't take any more calls right now. All right, as promised, coming up next hour, it was something that appeared. It was written by George Monbiot. You know who he is. He writes for The Guardian. He has his own blog site. And I would have loved to have found an article like this in the American Medium, in a newspaper somewhere. But I didn't, but I found it in The Guardian. Stick around. We'll be back in a few minutes. I'm Mike Molloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. As promised, this piece written by George Monpiot in The Guardian of the UK a few days back is something that I think we I need to share with you, because a lot of people in this country have false ideas about the Tea Party movement, the teabaggers, thanks to our corrupted media. And thanks to this strange phenomenon in this country that people will back politically an organization that slowly cuts the backers' throats because of the misrepresentation. And this is where corporate media comes in, of course. But as Monpiot points out, there are two ways of cutting a deficit. You can either raise taxes or reduce spending. Now, somebody will say, well, you can do both. Okay. Raising taxes means taking money from the rich. Cutting spending means taking money from the poor. Now, not in all cases is it just taking money from the poor. Some government spending takes money from ordinary citizens and gives it to banks and arms companies and oil barons and farmers. You know how that works. But in most cases, the state transfers wealth from rich to poor, while tax cuts shift wealth from poor to rich. Right? Can we agree on that? So, in a society that, at least on the surface, appears to be a democracy, where it appears that we are electing our leaders, the rich have a struggle on their hands. They've got to persuade the other 99% of us to vote against our own interests. They have to convince us that we must shrink government. We must support spending cuts rather than tax raises. And as Monpiot points out, here in the United States, they appear to be succeeding. Right. I've never quite been able to understand this. A populist movement that the teabaggers claim they are, which they are not. I'll get to that in a moment. But a populist movement that says, take more, ultra wealthy, take more from us. Cut our throats even deeper. Destroy us, the middle class, in order for you to survive. I can't, you know, I've spent a number of years trying to understand that. And it's the main reason, I guess, why I am such a political cynic, and why I realize that most Americans are dumber than a pile of dog crap. It's just astonishing. If there's going to be a populist movement, why would it be a movement against the people who think they are the populist movement? It's madness. Madness. As Monpiot points out, partly as a result of the Bush tax cuts of 2001, 2003, and 2005, all of which, of course, extended by our great liberal progressive president, Barack Obama. Figure that one out. You Obama supporters, I know you have some kind of rationale for that, but talk about cutting your own throat politically, but I digress. Taxation, because of all those Bush tax cuts, taxation of the wealthy, in Obama's words, is at its lowest level in half a century, quote unquote. Ooh. Now, it's easy to understand the consequences of these kinds of policies. And the consequences include a level of inequality unknown in other developed nations. This is why you always hear the wealthy and the right wingers denigrating what's going on in Europe, because they have an economic system more equitably, I'm not saying they don't have their billionaires, more equitably distributed. And if it doesn't come in the form of income, it comes in the form of social services, social welfare. But not here. No, no, no. Nobel laureate Joseph Stiglitz points out that in the past 10 years, the income of the top 1% here in the U.S., has risen by almost 20%, while the blue-collar male worker has seen his income fall by 12%. Now, why it's broken out by gender there, I'm not sure, but the statistic is startling. The top 1% sees a 20% rise in income, the top 1%, while the other 99% sees a drop of 12%. And that's just in the past 10 years. In the past couple of years, it's probably the discrepancy, I'm sure, is much greater. But never mind. The deal being thrashed out in the U.S. Congress, as you're well aware, with this super committee and all this other crap, is really going to wind up only cutting spending. There is no way in hell that the Republicans, the right-wingers, the neo-fascists on that super committee are going to agree to tax increases. They've already stated that. On anybody. So, as the former Republican Senator Alan Simpson said, quote, the little guy is going to be cremated, end quote. Now, the little guy in today's atmosphere, the little guy is the 99% of us who are not, well, in the upper 1%. Because everybody else is at tremendous risk. When you see people losing their homes, when you understand that a very high percentage of all mortgage holders in the, or mortgage owers in this country are underwater on their property, when you see unemployment at 16%, screw this 9.1% garbage that the U.S. government puts out. That is so misleading and such a lie. When unemployment is hitting 16, 18, 20%, and if you break it into demographic groups, in some areas, unemployment is hitting 35 and 40%, well, then the little guy is being cremated. And the little guy is about 95% of us. So why do we stay in the furnace? Why are we saying, oh, okay, go ahead, cremate us. Go ahead, burn us up. Here we go. Well, people are starting to disagree with that idea. You can see some of them on Wall Street, camped out. You're going to see some of them starting October 6th in Washington, D.C., you're going to see some starting this Saturday in Los Angeles and Chicago. Just keep your eyes open and stay tuned to alternative media, because you're damn sure not going to get the kind of coverage that you need from corporate media. But I digress again. So with the little guy about to be cremated and the economic deal being thrashed out in Congress by the super committee, cut state spending, but not, cut state spending, but not raise taxes. The bottom line, that means more economic decline. We're going to sink even further. Now, most economists keep telling us this. That means a bigger deficit, which is what this is supposed to be all about. Cutting it. It's insane. It is completely insane. So as George Monbiot asked the question rhetorically, because he's about to answer it here, how did this happen? How have we gotten to this point so, seemingly so quickly? How did it happen? We have a break here. When we come back, we'll talk about it. The immediate reason, of course, is that Republican members of Congress who are supported by the Tea Party, a lot of whom are the Tea Party, won't budge on any of this. But there's more to it. That explains nothing, really. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
your day screaming with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. So George Monbiot, writing for the Guardian of the UK, talking about how Americans, convinced by, among others, Fox News and the rest of corporate media and the Tea Party, to act against our own welfare. Okay, so how did this happen? How did all this come about? The Tea Party movement mostly consists of people who have been harmed by tax cuts for the rich and spending cuts for the poor and the middle class. Okay? Let me say it again. The tax party movement mostly consists of people who have been harmed by tax cuts for the rich. They've been harmed. And they've been further harmed by spending cuts for the poor and middle. So why would they mobilize against their own welfare? Great question, George. Why would people do that? For Christ's sake, I've been asking that question for what? A decade now? This is, it makes no sense to me. Does it to you? Well, no. Montbiot says you can understand all this if you only remember what everyone seems to have forgotten, how this teabag movement began. And he quotes the Sunday Observer, claiming this past week that, quote, the Tea Party rose out of anger over the scale of federal spending, and in particular in bailing out the banks, end quote. That's not true. Now, that's what teabaggers claim, but that's nonsense. The movement started, remember Rick Santelli on CNBC? And he got his bony ass out there one day on CNBC and called for a tea party of city traders in Chicago to dump securities in Lake Michigan in protest of Barack Obama's plan to, in Santelli's words, subsidize the losers. Now, who are the losers? People losing their homes. Because of the manipulation of the money-crazed sons of bitches who own capitalism, for whom capitalism was designed, who continue to feed on capitalism, and are destroying the rest of us. In other words, the birth of the teabaggers was a demand for a financiers, the moneyed class, their mobilization against the bailout of the victims, people losing their homes. Now, on the very same day that that happened, as Montbiot points out, a group called Americans for Prosperity set up a Tea Party Facebook page on the same day. On the same day. A Tea Party Facebook page and started organizing Tea Party events. And the movement, whose program is still almost totally supported by Americans for Prosperity, the movement took off from there. So, who or what is Americans for Prosperity, Montbiot asked. Well, you know this. It was founded and funded by Charles and David Koch. It's the Koch brothers. You know this, Americans for Prosperity. This is their deal. These people are destroying the country. What are we going to do about it? Nothing. We let war criminals go out on book tour. We let mass killers wander around the United States talking about their memoirs. What are we going to do about two people who are destroying the country from the inside? Well, nothing. Of course not. The Koch brothers are worth close to $45 billion. Now, as you know, Koch Industries, or you should know, is a massive oil, gas, minerals, timber, and chemicals company. Let me say that again. See if that registered. See if anything clicks in your head. Koch Industries is a massive oil, gas, minerals, timber, and chemicals company. Do you get it? I had to read the sentence twice. In other words, they don't make anything. They don't produce anything. They just take. They extract from the earth anything they can get their goddamn hands on. They take. They take. They don't give. And they want more. More. A massive oil, gas, minerals, timber, and chemicals company. Well, Mike, chemicals are made. So they make nothing. They manufacture nothing. They contribute nothing. They take. They take. They continue to take. These goddamn people are like lampreys. They're bloodsuckers. They're like vampires. But they're worth $45 billion, huh? Now, as Montbiot points out, in the past 15 years, these two thugs have poured at least $85 million into lobby groups arguing for lower taxes for the rich and weaker regulations for industry. And, you know, why would they do that? More when we come back.
That's the way you do it. You play the guitar on MTV. That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free. Now that ain't working. That's the way you do it. Let me tell you, them guys ain't dumb. Maybe get a blister on your little finger. Maybe get a blister on your thumb. We got to install.
Mike Malloy Show, because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
It's even worse than that. 25 before the hour, so we're talking about two of the most criminal minds ever to operate in the United States, and that would be the Koch brothers. The Koch brothers themselves. Americans for progress. My ass. Charles and David Koch. We have criminals. We have felons running around this country, unindicted, unconvicted. All over the place. This country has become like it's starting to stink like a rotting corpse. And you have these huge, rats running around on the corpse eating. Is that too graphic? Or you have the very people who caused the society to, not necessarily caused it to be mortally wounded, but certainly contributed to that wounding, out talking about that, but by committing criminal acts against the rest of humanity, crimes against humanity, war crimes, and they're out selling their books. Then you have Charles and David Koch, who are hell-bent on ending everything as you've come to know it, or think you know it. Me too. You know, that's their objective. Now, the groups and politicians the Koch brothers also fund lobby to destroy collective bargaining, to stop the laws reducing carbon emission. I don't know what these cockroaches think they're going to breathe, but by God, they've got it figured out somehow, right? They also fund groups that lobby to destroy healthcare reform in any form. And they also underwrite organizations that are attempting to control the banks. All of this is what the Koch brothers want. And as George Montbiot points out in the article in The Guardian in the UK, they are here to destroy everything. I mean, what other conclusion are you going to come to? They want lower taxes for the rich, weaker regulations for industry, destroy collective bargaining, stop laws reducing carbon emissions, stymie health care reform, hobble attempts to control the banks. But as Montbiot points out, the Koch's greatest political triumph is the creation of the Tea Party movement. Indeed. David Koch at their 2009 summit meeting called Defending the Dream. You know, what dream do you think they're talking about? Come on, especially you right-wing half-wits who listen to this program. You know what their dream is? To destroy your ass, to break you into a million pieces, and yet they're out there, you are out there supporting their candidates, their hand-picked killers, every chance you get. You are insane. The dream that they want to destroy is yours. Only they call it defending the dream. David Koch, at this 2009 Defending the Dream Summit, explained the events and protests that they've started with Americans for Prosperity Help. Here's the quote from George Monbiot. In his article, David Koch says, quote, 5 years ago, my brother Charles and I provided the funds to start Americans for Prosperity. It's beyond my wildest dreams how Americans for Prosperity has grown into this enormous organization. End quote. Does that bother you, right winger? Or do you, I mean, are you still so deluded that you think you are doing something? Forget for the country, because you're such a selfish son of a bitch to begin with, you and your creepy religious nonsense. But do you think that this does something for you? I mean, take it to right down to its very base selfish level. That would be you. How is your support for Americans for Prosperity helping you? It isn't. It's cutting your own throat. And the Koch brothers laugh while you bleed. Ah, but might as well tell that to a tree stump, right? As George Monbiot points out, Americans for Prosperity mobilized the anger of people who found their conditions of life declining, and then challenged that anger into a campaign to make the conditions of their life worse. Worse! Oh my God! Teabag campaigners take to the streets to demand less tax for billionaires and worse health, education, and social insurance for themselves. What is wrong with you? But this is America. This is one of the reasons a lot of people are emigrating from this country. It's like, God damn, I can't do this anymore. I can't live in a society where the governing class is comprised of these freaks. And where's the resistance? Well, there's some on Wall Street going on right now. The OccupyWallStreet.org movement. They're trying. They're being pepper sprayed, tear gas, not tear gas, not yet, pepper sprayed, maced, kicked, beaten, arrested. And the irony, of course, and this is always the irony, the hired police force that's doing all of this are the very people acting against their own interests, the very people that the Koch brothers laugh at, just goddamn laugh at. They have their own private police forces, you see, their own private fire protection, you see, their own private emergency medical people, you see. You want to destroy a society, no matter how big or small it is, work within that society to pit different groups against each other. That's exactly what's happening. Oh, that's been happening for a long time, but now it's been raised to an art form. So, teabaggers take to the streets to demand less tax for billionaires and worse health, education, and social insurance for themselves, as Monbiot points out. So, next question, are they stupid? You know, the quick answer is they're criminally stupid. They're insanely stupid. But Monbiot says, no, they're not stupid. They have been misled by another instrument of corporate power, the media. Okay, George, I can concede some of that, but dear God, Monbiot says the movement, the teabaggers, has been relentlessly promoted by Fox News, which belongs to a more familiar billionaire, like the Kochs, Robert Rupert Murdoch, aims to misrepresent the democratic choices we face in order to persuade us to vote against our own interests and in favor of his. And I might cynically ask, how's that working out? And the answer is working out just great. Just great. Look at the Berman, the whole class of Berman. I realize there are some Democratic members of Congress who are Berman and snakes and thugs. But look at that entire class, Republicans, every single thing they have done in this session of Congress and the last is to advance the interests of the billionaires and stomp your ass into the ground, teabagger, and mine. And yet, you continue to support them. OMFG. Montbiot sums up by saying, what is taking place in the U.S. Congress right now is a kind of political coup. A handful of billionaires have shoved a wrench into the legislative process through the candidates they have bought and the movement that supports them. They are now breaking and reshaping the entire U.S. system to serve their interests. We knew this once, Montbiot says, but now we've forgotten. What hope do we have of resisting a force we refuse to even acknowledge? Well, I acknowledge that force, and I know you do, Truth Seeker. And I think a lot of people are beginning to acknowledge that force. And the only thing I can hope for at this point is what a lot of rational people are hoping for. There has to be a complete reshaping, not in the manner that the billionaires want it, of the Koch brothers and the rest of these filthy, rotten vermin who are destroying the country, but the society, the economic system, the political system, all of it has to be reshaped. How do you reshape it? Well, in our case, I don't think you can. So you have to replace it. And that's a process that takes time and energy and bodies. Blood? Well, in most other moments in time or societies on the earth when the society had to be changed radically and dramatically, well, take a look at your history. Before the hour. You know, it's amazing that a writer for a foreign newspaper can so succinctly put into perspective and just define, just lay it out there for anyone to see what has happened here. I can't think of another writer in the American press anyway that put such a fine point on what has happened here as George Montbiot. I wanted to mention this. Maybe I did. I forget. Several members of the group Veterans for Peace tried on Monday night to effect a citizen's arrest on Donald Rumsfeld. Were you aware of that? Did I mention that? Did I mention that, Kathy? I don't know. Yeah, I think I did. I think I did. It bears repeating, though. One of the protesters, a guy named Nate Goldschlag, told WCVB, I guess that would be in Boston, television. He said, quote, I went down in front and looked Donald Rumsfeld in the eye and said, I'm making a citizen's arrest. He lied us into Iraq. He lied about weapons of mass destruction. He lied about Saddam Hussein being involved in 9/11, blah, blah, blah. Well, the protesters were removed from the event. The three members of Veterans for Peace and a fourth person, a member of Code Pink. And one protester was arrested outside the event for allegedly using a bullhorn to assault a police officer. But a goddamn war criminal is inside, and the police didn't go in and arrest him. Oh, let's arrest a protester. What happened? Well, his bullhorn knocked up against my shoulder. Oh my God! Really? Well, that's assault on the police officer! Yes, I know! What about the guy inside, fellas? Hey, to serve and protect. What about the guy inside who's responsible partly for hundreds of thousands of deaths and the worst crime a society, a nation is able to commit, according to the Nuremberg judges? What about him? Oh, no, that's right. Focus on the protester who bumped up against you with a bullhorn. Oh, my goodness. Precious, precious police officer shoulder. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Don't stop and think, Mr. Police Officer, about all the murder and mayhem that was perpetrated by, well, among others, Donald Rumsfeld, in your name, Mr. Police Officer. That's right. They did it for you. They did it to protect you and your mom and your apple pie and your flag and your way of life. Right? Murder. Crimes unspeakable. Mayhem, destruction, death. Oh, but get the guy with the bullhorn. Yeah. Hustle the three veterans for peace, Mr. Police Officer. Veterans. You know the first word in veterans for police? What is that? That's right. Veterans. What does that mean? That means that they put on a uniform for whatever reason and went through the training for whatever reason and went into a war zone for whatever reason. And now they're back for whatever reason. And your funky ass is going to arrest them for bumping up against you with a bullhorn while inside they're trying to effect an arrest, a citizen's arrest, which last time I checked was legal, on a war criminal, a mass killer. But get the guy with the bullhorn. Yeah. And then these poor schmucks, we just talked about them, these poor, ignorant cockroaches, 300 people who had shown up to buy a copy of Rumsfeld's book, Known and Unknown. Them. And Raw Story quotes, they have the video up, Raw Story, quotes one of the women who was there to buy the book as saying, quote, he's one of the greatest Americans that has ever lived, end quote. One of the greatest Americans. Well, people thought that about Hitler, too. People thought that about every single tyrant, every single mass murderer had, especially politically, a political mass murderer had his or her followers. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, I love him. Kill some more for me. Kill more for me. Please, Donald. You're the one of the greatest Americans that ever lived. I wish he was defense secretary again so he could go kill some more of those Muslim terrorists. Right, lady? One of the greatest Americans that ever lived. Guilty you know, Rumsfeld and the whole Bush crime family, that's an organization that you really don't need to put on trial. The prima facie evidence is the corpses strewn all over the Middle East, all over Iraq, all over Pakistan, all over Afghanistan. Corpses, just dead people, men, women, children, displaced people, refugees. There's your proof of the one of the greatest Americans that has ever lived? Really? Jesus God. So the question is, how do you maintain your sanity? I sometimes wonder how I maintain mine. Thank God I have a 7-year-old kid. She helps me. I focus on her. But how do you maintain your sanity in a society that is obviously, huge chunks of it, totally insane? How do you do that? He's one of the greatest Americans that has ever lived. Donald Rumsfeld, whose death toll exceeded that of Jack the Ripper by... Oh, never mind. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.